Business Insights. What are the things that you've tried in the past that have worked and you replicate for the future?
Well, there are things that I think we can do that are old school that could come back or could be refocused on. And one of those is only taking exclusive job orders from clients instead of working in this chaotic and dysfunctional multi-job order environment that most recruiters work, where they end up filling about 1 out of 7 of the jobs that they take. And it is an irony to me that is why our fees are so high, in inverted commas, is because we get paid for so little of the work we do. So I'm working with companies who are slowly moving to 100% only taking exclusive job orders. I think that's something that's worked very well for me in the past. You end up with less orders, but you get your consultants, instead of working on 20 orders and filling 2, they're working on 8 and filling 6.
Yeah.
Everybody wins. And working on exclusive candidates, in other words, selling to candidates why it's in their interest to work only through us, is a tactic that was used years ago in skill shortages that I think is almost entirely lost. As long as you can get to the candidate first and explain to that candidate that if they would just give us 1 week to represent them, it's going to save them a lot of time and stress. And again, in skill, I mean, I'm working with one of the companies I'm a shareholder of at the moment, is in legal placements in Sydney and Melbourne, paralegal placements, you know, the legal secretaries. If they can get a legal secretary to walk in the door tomorrow morning, they'll have that person 8 interviews by that night if she or he wanted them. That's how short the market is. So to actually get a candidate who has the right level of skill and work with them exclusively is almost a guaranteed fee. So, and yet most recruiters will interview the candidate and let them walk across the road to a competitor. Why would you do that? So that's not a new idea, but we need to do that. Something I tried years ago, which was really, really cool, and I think quite innovative, even if I say so myself, was to introduce Net Promoter Score. You introduce it into recruitment business and actually link recruiter bonuses to candidate satisfaction. How cool is that? So I did that at Aquint in Australia. It wasn't all their bonus. I mean, I think 75% of their bonus was on their fees like anybody else. But the 25% kicker was on the Net Promoter Score for their office going up. So everyone was in the same boat. If it didn't go up, no one got the 25% kicker. If it did, everyone got it. It had tangible effect on behavior and cooperation. And people thinking, oh, I don't want to keep that candidate waiting and I better return that person's call. Then what happened then was I engineered a management buyout of 10 offices and we started Firebrand. So I never saw that all the way through. I think the new regime then cancelled all that. But I think that is that kind of innovative thinking about, you know, it's interesting in recruitment how criticized recruiters are for some of their behaviors. But then we must look at the way we pay them and understand and look at the model of contingent recruitment, where you only get paid if you fill the job. All those things cause a perfect storm where, you know, recruiters are almost forced into the corner. And I don't want to defend bad recruitment behavior because it's indefensible, but no recruiter comes in to the office in the morning and says, now, listen, how can I piss off my candidates today? No one comes in with that attitude.
Yeah.
They're driven to that through spending time on unproductive behaviors and because they're only paid on success. So if we can, you know, the holy grail would be to get people working on exclusive job orders, or even retained would be better, and linking their pay to satisfaction as well as fees, and then you're going to get some of the right behaviors happening. So I think that would be a really cool thing to do going forward. And, of course, social selling. My thoughts on social selling are not theoretical. Engineered them and learnt them and worked with my companies that I've worked with to actually change almost all our business development to that way. So I know that works. And if you're prepared to, if a company owner is prepared to invest in that and take a longer term view, then there will be great returns. So those are some of the things, Steve, that I think can be rebranded and brought out again and implemented quite successfully.
Well, if you look at old habits you believe have been lost, we've been talking a lot about social media, modern ways of marketing your business, representing your brand. Do you think there's other old habits which have been lost which should be rekindled? Doesn't have to be 100%. Doesn't have to be inside recruitment, just in general.
Oh, I think here's something that most people would maybe not agree with, but I think that the more technology that is foisted on us in our lives, which we are subject to everywhere we go, the more there is an innate human desire for real engagement.
Agreed.
I mean, that you know, how many times have I picked up the phone to the insurance company and I just say, can I just speak to somebody who can tell me, you know, the answer? And I've got a lot of stories about this. Now's not the time, but I'm a strong believer that the more technology, and that's why I think that ironically, with machine learning and artificial intelligence, where our kids will get jobs in the future is through their human influencing and empathy skills, and the skills that have been poo-pooed over the years as soft and unimportant. They are going to become and are becoming the most important skills, because human beings are still human beings and they crave authenticity. And if there's one thing that's definitely true, social media, news, fake news, technology, none of that's humanly authentic, and we want it. And if you want to then bring it back to recruitment, I think that those sorts of skills are the skills that are going to reemerge. And by that I mean really empathetically interviewing properly, engaging with people properly, managing the process, advisory consulting type service. I call it the craft of recruitment. That has been lost. When I first sat down at my first desk as a recruiter, there were two things on my desk. Do you know what they were, Steve?
Rolodex and a pen. And a phone.
Well,
sorry.
There was a pen. There was a three. there were three things. There was a pen. There was a phone, a pen, and an ashtray. It was a different time.
Yeah.
The ashtray is now gone. But so if you weren't on the telephone or sitting talking to someone face to face, there was actually nothing to do. There was a card box of candidates, but and of course it's now got so digital that now most recruiters wouldn't know what to do if they didn't have technology to fiddle with. Now, you've heard me speak a lot in the first half of this thing about the importance of technology and how we need to get, and it's not only technology on the social sense, it's marketing technology. It's artificial intelligence to take away the hack work. It's automated marketing. It's social media and sourcing tactics via, but sourcing, you know, using technology to source people don't understand. It's very obvious to me. Identifying candidates, Steve, on the internet is a skill, but recruiting them is a totally different skill. Right? I could find you on LinkedIn. You're not recruited. Me giving you a call and engaging in a conversation is a totally different skill, which most recruiters lack. It's an intensely human skill built on trust, empathy, seduction. The word is seduction, not in the romantic sense, but in the sense that seduction relies on building up trust and on commonality and on building respect, and then it can be consummated. So I think that it is the future of recruitment is where highly evolved technology merges with intensely rounded human skills.
It's interesting because when I think about technology and we have a conversation about what's going on the one side you could say everything's going to change, and then on the other side you say actually nothing's going to change. If you take tech, take an example, take Tinder, and I hear people who will slag off the Tinder dating app, and they say it's dehumanizing stuff, that, you know, you swipe right if you like someone, you swipe left if you don't. And I disagree completely. I say, well, when people walk into a bar or a room, they're swiping right, swiping left in their heads already. They've always been swiping left or right. It's just that the application allows you to do that quickly. And then you're getting through to talking to someone, but you have no loss of the people skills. You may mutually like someone on a dating app, but if you can't talk, and obviously use the word engage, but if you can't talk and have some social, exercise some social skills, you're dead in the water. It doesn't matter how much tech. And you know, so with LinkedIn, if you're going to, you've got access to so many people, and you do have a level playing field against some of your competition. So then it comes back to, what are your social skills like, and how do you network and socialize above and beyond what your competitors do? So the technology's there, but it's very much a tool set. And it's, in a sense, as you look at the different generations and snapshots of the tech used in different timeframes, it's an enabler. But the fundamental skills that were there have not gone away, and they're what still drives differentiation.
I agree with you. And your example of Tinder is a great one. We have always made superficial initial judgments of people, and then we either found out that the prettiest girl in the room had nothing to say, or the best looking guy was an idiot, and we moved on to somebody nicer. And that's what Tinder does initially. So I agree with you entirely, and I think that I do not think that technology will replace that. As I said at the very beginning of this thing, will replace that sort of nuanced decision making that's so important in human life. And of course, that's important in recruitment, but it's important in just about everything else.
So your message to the recruitment owner is, get your technology in order, because it's kind of the oil that greases the cogs, and the cogs that need to be reassembled a little bit. But do that, because then you can let your consultants get on and be productive and do what they do best, which is relate with people and create relationships.
Exactly. So you need the technology, because that's just going to make an even playing field, and certainly, obviously you and I would agree that technology has made our lives a lot better in many ways, and it will in recruitment too. But your recruiters have got to be good at those things that only human beings can do. Not good at things. Don't compete with the machine. Don't try and match better than the machine. That will do it better than us. But the machine's not going to beat us. Show me a machine that's going to handle a counteroffer with your candidate. When that day happens, then we're done. That's not going to happen. Candidate changes his mind because he's been offered more money to stay where he is. Ask him to talk to a machine to turn him around? It's not going to happen. But a good recruiter would have managed that possibility from the very beginning. That is the craft of recruitment. That's where trust, empathy, and all those factors still have a strong part to play.
So the opposite question, what are the things you thought would be a surefire win but never took off?
Yeah, I don't really, they're very micro things. So, for example, years ago, we opened 3 offices in China, and everyone was this recruitment, of course, and everyone was like, China, there's 1 billion people, you only have to get 2% of the market, and you'll be bigger than Randstad, all that kind of stuff. Well, that never happened. It was incredibly hard. I mean, I think some people made a success of it, but we found it incredibly difficult to do business in China for legal reasons, for cultural reasons. A whole range of different things. Equally, I opened an office in Korea, and the idea was to take advantage of the boom in temporary and contract work that we were sure was going to happen there. That didn't work either. The business did do okay in permanent recruitment, but we had no real point of differentiation over the local players. In fact, we had a disadvantage in some ways. So that didn't work. I think that there were some early HR tech ideas that I thought might be players, and I've now come to realize, as I get pitched an HR tech idea every week by somebody, that virtually none of them are going to work because they don't address the real issue in recruitment. Most of them are no more than matching tools, and matching is not the hard part of recruitment, as we've talked about for the last hour. Matching is the easy part of recruitment. The hard part of recruitment is recruiting and consummating. And so these tools that people come up with, and some do play a role, but most of them have failed. And some of them are getting funded by lots of money, and people have lost and will lose their money in most cases. So I've gone off that. I'm looking for the holy. I've seen some things that I think are great ideas. Live Hire in Australia is a company that builds talent communities. I took a tiny investment in that business a couple of years ago. Because I thought it was on the right track. It did solve a problem in our industry, which is changing recruitment from reactive to proactive. They since listed on the stock exchange and are going well. Video My Job is a company that takes, written ads and turns them into real live videos on the basis that video is what people like to consume. Mm-hmm. So some of these things are very clever ideas and are working. They're still to be proven. They're at the early stage. Neither of those companies make any money. They do generate revenue, but they don't make money. But I think they're on the right track because they are solving issues that the industry has.
Is that where you're investing at the moment, in those sort of
those two, yes, and a couple of others. But I invest in mainstream recruitment companies. I invested in People to People, and it now turns over $80 million. So that's one that's been going 10 years. But I invest in Consult Recruitment in New Zealand because I think that they have a smart vision about specialization and using social and brand. And, you know, so I sit on their board and help them out. And there's three or four other sort of what you might call mainstream recruitment companies. But, you know, they would have found nothing new in anything I've said today because they are living that. And obviously, I believe that's the right direction.
Staying in the world of recruitment, Greg, what's the worst advice that you hear being given out to people? It could be recruitment business owners. It could be consultants. What's the worst advice you hear being doled out these days?
Oh, the worst advice I see, and you see it on LinkedIn and Instagram all the time, is never give up. It's the most stupid advice I've ever heard. If what you're doing is not working, give up immediately.
Yeah.
Recalibrate.
Yeah.
Rethink your strategy. Refuel yourself. Refocus. Come up with a new plan, and then go again. But this business of never give up is the stupidest advice I've ever heard. And people sometimes say to me, like, you know, you're hitting against a brick wall, so do give up and find a way around it. So that kind of pop psychology nonsense is pervasive on social media, but it's sort of to creep into people's minds. Never give up it might come from a nice concept of resilience, but no, I mean, the smartest thing I've ever done in my life is give up lots of times, but I've gone again on a slightly different plan. That would be a smarter strategy, and then you succeed. So I think that would be my best advice, or what I think is the stupidest advice. Never give up. The other thing is that I hear people say is that recruitment is simple. It's not rocket science. You know, that is a stupid comment, because you know what? We're not building rockets. So it's not a very helpful thing to point out that recruitment's not rocket science. But to assume that recruitment is easy is a very stupid comment. It's a very nuanced, difficult job to do well. It may not be intellectually challenging, such as building rockets. However, it is equally challenging to do the sorts of things I've spoken about today. When I say equally challenging, I'm not trying to compare recruiters with rocket scientists. I'm trying to say that it is a difficult job that to do well over the long term is very, very unusual, and that's why we have such high staff. One of the reasons we have such high staff turnover in this business, because it's hard to be good at it.